are listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The path has been cleared for a judge to hear a class-action sexual discrimination complaint filed by female employees at the U.S. Mint. Filed by 32 female workers, the complaint alleges that managers at the Denver-based Mint use discrimination when considering job assignments, discipline, promotions, and terminations. In addition, the suit says women were subjected to a hostile working environment of sexual harassment. Damages for emotional abuse are expected to reach nearly $300,000 per employee. The Treasury Department filed for an appeal that was denied by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission on Monday.
Workers in the United States aren't the only ones with concerns about jobs being offshored to places like India and China. Amicus, the United Kingdom's largest manufacturing technical and skilled persons union, says that more than 12,000 British jobs were offshored in 2004. The union projects more than 18,000 additional jobs leaving by the end of next year. Companies insist that they are only moving low-paying processing jobs out of the UK. Amicus representatives say, however, that high-paying management jobs have also begun to move offshore. The union says Scotland has been hit especially hard because a high number of call centers operate there.
Employees at a major sugar producer went on strike yesterday after contract negotiations stalled. Nearly 650 Florida Crystal Corporation workers in Palm Beach County walked off the job over proposals to outsource the company's hauling jobs, eliminate overtime pay, and raise copays for health benefits. Represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, striking employees watched from the picket lines yesterday as non-union employees were bussed in to keep the plant running. The company says that the market is uncertain, and in order to remain competitive, it has to make some unpopular decisions. Both sides say they wish to return to the negotiation table as soon as possible.
Unlike the U.S. Justice Department, the European Union's Court of First Instance upheld a record $600 million fine against Microsoft for holding a monopoly in personal computer software. In addition, the computer giant will be required to reveal its Windows operating source code to the European Union and to allow third-party media players. In response to the ruling, Microsoft will offer a European version of the Windows operating system next month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Poverty in America is continuing to increase. According to the Census Bureau, there were 1.3 million more poor people in the U.S. in 2003. The poverty level is 12.5% of the population. In the 50s, it was 22%. Then the War on Poverty helped cut poverty to 12.1% by 1969. Poverty has gone up for 3 years in a row. Among children, the poverty rate is 16.2%. 10.4% of the elderly are poor. Black and Hispanic poverty rates are much higher than average. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Costco is different, and that really POs Wall Street. The nationwide retailer treats its 100,000 clerks, forklift operators, and other workers as valued assets to be invested in and nurtured. Unlike the Walmart model of paying the least you can to rank-and-file employees, squeezing the last ounce of toil out of each of them, busting any whisper of unionization, and causing a workforce turnover like employees are nothing but disposable coffee cups. How different is Costco? Starting pay is $10 an hour. Workers typically earn $40,000 a year after 3 years on the job. The company covers 92% of employees' health care costs, and the Teamsters Union provides strong bargaining representation for the workers. Also, while CEOs at other major corporations average 531 times the pay of their lowest-paid employees, Costco's top boss takes only 10 times the pay of his typical rank-and-filer. His annual salary is $350,000, compared to some $5 million a year hauled off by Walmart's honcho. From day one, says the chief financial officer at Costco, we've run the company with the philosophy that if we pay better than average, provide a salary people can live on, have a positive environment and good benefits, we'll be able to hire better people. They'll stay longer and be more efficient. It works. Costco's turnover is minimal, its profits are consistently strong, and its stock price has quadrupled in 10 years. But Wall Street analysts are sourpusses when it comes to this remarkable corporate maverick. Costco's benefits are overly generous, sniffs one Wall Streeter, asserting the stockholders could do even better if only Costco would conform to the Walmart model. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Costco is richly profitable for stockholders, while also providing middle-class possibilities for our communities. Isn't that the best model of all?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be. Good evening. Wednesday, the 29th of December, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live all over the planet. On radio stations from coast to coast here in the United States, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet at radiopower.org and cable radio network, archives at whiterosesociety.org. The lead story in all the news reports, of course, is the disaster from the tsunami, and we're going to get into that in a few minutes. I want to share an interesting take on it. And some interesting information about it. But first, number one, I have to say, Christmas has finally fully come to our house. Our oldest is now home, so all three of our kids are here, along with her husband, who brought a gift from her, from my parent, my, what do you call that? Your kid's parents, not brother-in-law, whatever, my daughter's husband's parents, which is a new James Lee Burke book, autographed. If you haven't read James Lee Burke's work, and you like fiction, you will become absolutely addicted. Anyhow, Karl Rove sums it all, and thank you, by the way. Karl Rove sums it all up for liberals by Ward Architect Sutton. I don't know if you saw this in These Times. This is a cartoon, but it is this incredibly succinct. You know, I remember when the Democrats kind of ran things, and it was nothing like this. It's an incredibly succinct summary of the worldview and the behavior, the attitudes, as it were, of the Republicans and all this stuff. And I find it just absolutely fascinating. I just have to share it with you. It's incredible. It's a cartoon, and Karl Rove is sitting here looking at you with a smile, and he says, "In 2000, we bitch-slapped you by stealing the White House. Then we patronizingly praised Gore's concession speech. We took office and told you to kiss our butts as if we actually had a mandate. We dove headfirst into destroying all the little treaties and regulations you liked. We dissed your so-called science. We mocked your lack of our kind of faith. We ignored all your protests and warnings about attacking Iraq, then refused to admit we ever made any mistake. We belittled your intellectualism, demonized your dissent, and flaunted our own unchecked power smugly. We used 9/11 and your New York City like a cheap whore. We set out not only to beat your candidate, but to utterly humiliate him. We spit all over John Kerry's heroic war record and ridiculed his service and war wounds. We played to the worst in voters. We burned gays at the stake. We fear-mongered all the way through Election Day. We did all we could to block Kerry voters from voting. And as for those Diebold machines, well, you'll never really know, will you? Plus, we put our all into ousting Daschle just to rub your nose in it. But now it's time to unite and work together if you share our goals. And then Rove looks out and he says, do I detect a lingering bad attitude? Well, yes. Yes. Very simply. And that ain't the half of it, because he doesn't speak in this cartoon and in these times, doesn't speak at all to the rape and evisceration of democracy itself in the United States, as we document on this program day to day, day after day after day, as we send liberals out to the water cooler wars with all the body armor they need, as compared to George W. Well, Bush's decision at first to remain cloistered at his Texas ranch for the Christmas holiday rather than speak in person about the tragedy in Southeast Asia, according to some, showed scant appreciation for the magnitude of the suffering. However, late yesterday afternoon, he says he said that he was going to hold a teleconference to discuss several issues, including the tsunami, and follow that with a short public statement. That will be coming today, probably while we're on the air, in fact. In Germany, by the way, for our serious listeners, I'll also be on Air America Radio from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, filling in for Randy Rhodes today, just a FYI. In Germany, Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder cut short his vacation and returned to work in Berlin because of the Indian Ocean crisis. In Britain, the predominant U.S. voice speaking about the disaster was not Bush, but Bill Clinton, who in an interview with the BBC said the suffering was something like in a horror movie and urged a coordinated international response. Meanwhile, down in Crawford, Texas, George Bush was clearing brush and bicycling. What is this about clearing brush? Is there some sort of... I would love to speak to a Freudian about that. I have just enough training in Freudian psychology to suspect I know what they would say, but like these folks who their entire lawn doesn't have a single thing in it except grass, which is all perfectly green, no trees, no... Well, in any case, Bush's actions, this is from an article in the Washington Post. Bush's actions and words both communicated a lack of urgency about an event that will loom as large in the collective memories of several countries as the 9/11 attacks do in the United States. President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations, Leslie Gelb, said, when that many human beings die at the hands of terrorists or nature, you've got to show that this matters to you, that you care. So we're putting up originally $15 million, and now we've added a loan of $20 million for a total of $35 million. To put that into context, that $35 million, George W. Bush is going to spend $50 million on his inaugural coronation ceremonies. Just the extra security in New York City for the Republican National Convention was $58 million. Remember George W. Bush flying all over the country to campaign for president in Air Force One? $180 million. The RNC and the Bush campaign spent $240 million just for TV and radio ads in this last election. And the Bush administration, just to promote the taxpayer-funded Medicare discount card plan. This wasn't even the ultimate Medicare thing. This was just the MacGuffin, just the little device that, you're going to get a discount card. The actual program won't go into effect until 2006, and then you discover there's this donut hole in it. But you're going to get a discount card. Remember that? $18 million of taxpayer money spent to promote that. Just to put things in context, this is a true disaster. Some are suggesting that perhaps the Gaia hypothesis is right. Remember James Lovelock? He wrote a book. Oh, I forget the title of the book, but it was about the Gaia. In this book, he put forward what he called the Gaia theory. And Gaia is the name of an ancient Greek goddess, the goddess of the earth. And basically, he said, everything's interconnected, everything's alive, even the stuff that doesn't seem to be alive. The earth is a living organism. The rocks, the water, the air, the plants, the animals, it all interacts. And if you create, well, he didn't go so far as to say this, but many people are speculating. And I dance around a little of this in my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, which, of course, is about peak oil. It's about the end of the era of oil, ancient sunlight being oil. We are right at the edge of that. And Lovelock and his Gaia hypothesis and others, you know, that point out that actions are not without reactions. And if you're going to create giant holes under the ground by sucking out oil or water, as we have been doing aggressively all over the planet, billions, trillions of barrels of oil and water, and you leave giant empty holes, it may cause things to move around a little bit. Some are wondering if this might have something to do with it. You know, there was that big quake in California last year on the San Andreas Fault. My recollection, September 28th was when it was. Parkfield, it was centered near Parkfield. Interestingly, at that exact same time, American scientists were drilling a hole into the fault in that area to find out how much pressure was on the fault. And all of a sudden it went, 6.0 magnitude quake. It caused some problems. But, you know, California has been through earthquakes before. We've figured out how to do architecture and construction in ways that a 6.0 earthquake isn't a killer quake in most areas of California. But nonetheless, it sure shook a whole lot of folks up. We've seen killer earthquakes in Morocco in February, Japan's main island of Honshu in October. 2 weeks before the San Francisco quake, there was one of a magnitude of 8.2 in Colombia and Ecuador, right on the border between these two countries. In the Caribbean island of St. Lucia on February 16th, a violent rupture under the Caribbean island. March 1st in Formosa. Don't they call that Taiwan now? 200 people were killed by an earthquake. Mount Vesuvius in Italy erupted. Remember Mount Vesuvius? I'll tell you, the Italians do. Hundreds of people were killed in that. Is there, this article in the New York Times asks, some sort of butterfly effect, Simon Winchester, is there some sort of butterfly effect happening? He says, anecdotally, as this year is so tragically shown, there is evidence aplenty. Maybe something's going on here. Simon Winchester, the author of the book Krakatoa, The Day the Earth Exploded. Just quick information. There's a whole bunch of groups out there that are doing nonprofit, that are doing fundraising work for this. I have spent 26 years working as a part-time volunteer for a nonprofit organization, doing international relief work. I've been in disaster scenes, in war scenes, and just general horrific poverty areas in Africa, in South America, in Australia, in Europe, in the former Soviet Union, and in North America, including the extreme North America, all the way up into the Arctic Circle. And in many of these places, I've run into folks from many different nonprofit organizations. And what I've discovered is that some of them have very high overhead, and they're kind of scams, and some of them are really solid groups. And I just want to tell you the three groups that I consider really solid. If you're considering sending money to help out these folks, the American Friends Service Committee, this is the Quakers organization, afsc.org is their website. Doctors Without Borders, which is doctorswithoutborders.org. I have worked with these folks. They're great. And Oxfam America. Oxfam all over the world, oxfam.org or oxfamamerica.org. These are organizations that will use your money very, very carefully, and they are all putting together programs to help the folks who have been affected by this terrible disaster. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
If you sell a product or service, we have listeners from coast to coast and in 97 countries who want to know about you. Reach out to our national audience with our small business advertising package. You'll pay just a fraction of what national advertising usually costs. Call now at 802-229-2288 or visit our website, TomHartman.com, and follow the links to the small business advertising package for more information. Don't miss reaching a national audience now. 802-229-2288. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. I just want to reiterate this. It's, having been in this business, I can tell you, and still in it, I suppose. I still work from time to time with this group. Kinder and Jugend Hilfsdruck Solomon in Germany is the name of the group. And we have a division here in the United States, but we're not involved in direct relief work with this. In fact, I was just checking this morning with the head of the German organization, Samuel Mueller. We're not involved in direct relief work with this program in Asia with this tsunami. But I can tell you, you know, well-intentioned people, they go, oh, people are starving, let me send them food. And you end up with cases of food. It costs more to ship them overseas than it would cost if you simply took the money and sent it overseas and bought local food. And not only that, you send the money overseas, buy local food, and you're supporting a local economy and helping it get back on its feet. So, or if there is no local food overseas, still the stuff you ship is not going to be anywhere near as efficient as using that money to buy it in the wholesale market and buy it by the case, by the crate, by the plane load, and ship it over. Same thing with clothing, blankets, pretty much anything else. It is almost always more efficient to send cash. It's just a simple reality. Somebody in the chat room mentioned the Red Cross. I have a lot of respect for the Red Cross. The organizations I named, though, in my experience, in my opinion, and this isn't, this is just, you know, this may or may not be a statement of fact. This is my opinion and my experience, having done international relief work for 25 years in some of the worst hellholes on earth. I can tell you, my experience has been that the Red Cross's administrative expenses are a little too rich for my taste, particularly since Elizabeth Dole was running the thing, and a little too political. The groups that I recommend alphabetically: the American Friends Service Committee. This is the Quakers group, and they make heavy use of volunteers. AFSC, as in American Friends Service Committee, .org. Doctors Without Borders, an extraordinary group. Started in France originally. This is the American branch of it. It's doctorswithoutborders.org. And in my opinion, probably one of the very best. Certainly a strong competitor to the Red Cross. Oxfam, which started out as the Oxford Famine Relief Fund, which is where the name came from. Started out in Oxford, England, many, many, many years ago. But now it's Oxfam, and in the United States, in fact, I remember more than 20 years ago meeting with Nathan Gray, who I believe was the guy who started Oxfam USA. If he hadn't started it, he was one of the early leaders there. He provided me with some great insights and advice when I was first getting into this business. This must have been 1977 or 78. Anyhow, their website in the United States, Oxfam America, www.oxfamamerica.org. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jerry in Arizona is on the line. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. I just called to comment on the fact that nobody in the White House seemed to have thought of using some of our pre-positioned supply ships, many of which are in that general area, including Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean, an island that's owned by the British. These ships are fully stocked with everything conceivable for a war, which includes all kinds of food, which does not require refrigeration, and vehicles, jeeps, trucks, you name it, tents, everything. Now, it seems to me they could have immediately sent some of those ships, which, by the way, are crewed all the time. They're ready to go on a moment's notice.
Are you sure that they're not?
That
they're not using them? Because one of the news reports I saw yesterday is that we were moving ships into that area. I assumed it had something to do with that.
Maybe they have. I haven't heard of it.
Okay. Well, let's both look around for it, because you're absolutely right, and that's a very important thing. And it may just be that, you know, these are under the responsibility or under the control of Don Rumsfeld. Maybe the idea just hasn't occurred to him yet. Who knows?
Well, that I could believe.
Anything's possible. Jerry, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. We got to go. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
It's ironic. They're called answering machines, but they never give you answers. Oh, sure, they tell you so-and-so isn't here right now, but you have no idea where they went or when they'll be back. Of course, with GEICO, you won't talk to an answering machine. They have thousands of car insurance specialists standing by, so you always get answers from a real live person. No wondering, no waiting, no irony.
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The path has been cleared for a judge to hear a class action sexual discrimination complaint filed by female employees at the U.S. Mint. Filed by 32 female workers, the complaint alleges that managers at the Denver-based Mint use discrimination when considering job assignments, discipline, promotions, and terminations. In addition, the suit says women were subjected to a hostile working environment of sexual harassment. Damages for emotional abuse are expected to reach nearly $300,000 per employee. The Treasury Department filed for an appeal that was denied by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission on Monday.
Workers in the United States aren't the only ones with concerns about jobs being offshored to places like India and China. Amicus, the United Kingdom's largest manufacturing technical and skilled persons union, says that more than 12,000 British jobs were offshored in 2004. The union projects more than 18,000 additional jobs leaving by the end of next year. Companies insist that they are only moving low-paying processing jobs out of the UK. Amicus representatives say, however, that high-paying management jobs have also begun to move offshore. The union says Scotland has been hit especially hard because a high number of call centers operate there.
Employees at a major sugar producer went on strike yesterday after contract negotiations stalled. Nearly 650 Florida Crystal Corporation workers in Palm Beach County walked off the job over proposals to outsource the company's hauling jobs, eliminate overtime pay, and raise copays for health benefits. Represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, striking employees watched from the picket lines yesterday as non-union employees were bussed in to keep the plant running. The company says that the market is uncertain, and in order to remain competitive, it has to make some unpopular decisions. Both sides say they wish to return to the negotiation table as soon as possible.
Unlike the U.S. Justice Department, the European Union's Court of First Instance upheld a record $600 million fine against Microsoft for holding a monopoly in personal computer software. In addition, the computer giant will be required to reveal its Windows operating source code to the European Union and to allow third-party media players. In response to the ruling, Microsoft will offer a European version of the Windows operating system next month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Poverty in America is continuing to increase. According to the Census Bureau, there were 1.3 million more poor people in the U.S. in 2003. The poverty level is 12.5% of the population. In the 50s, it was 22%. Then the War on Poverty helped cut poverty to 12.1% by 1969. Poverty has gone up for 3 years in a row. Among children, the poverty rate is 16.2%. 10.4% of the elderly are poor. Black and Hispanic poverty rates are much higher than average. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It was a slow day. And the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. Now there was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio.
Isn't Paul Simon a genius? These are the days of miracles and wonder, my friends. Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Premium talk radio for high-octane brains, the Tom Hartman Program. That's me here with you. Live today on the 29th of December, 2004. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. The website, tomhartman.com. If you'd like to drop into our live chat, interesting conversations in there about everything from the crack in the cosmic egg, the famous book by Joseph Chilton Pierce, to speculations about George W. Bush. We won't go into those. 1-866-889-8894. Gary in St. Joseph, Missouri on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Tom. Been a long while since I've called you, but I liked your first topic this morning about how we're tapping the earth, and it seems to be buckling in response to it.
Well, it just sort of makes sense, you know.
Yeah, and the sad thing is we've known about it for going on about 50 years.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big clues should have been maybe 15, 20 years ago when those sinkholes started appearing in Florida, where they were drawing out all the fresh water from the aquifers, and all of a sudden houses started falling in.
Well, the biggest one was back up in my home state of Montana that I heard. I don't know if you can remember back to a idea they had called Project Gas Buggy.
I don't remember that.
This was back in the 50s when they were trying to figure out what they were going to do with nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy came up with the idea, hey, let's blow a nuclear device underground. It'll free up the trapped gas in sedimentary rock, and then we can go tap it.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I thought that was a great idea, and they had plans to do it along the Lewis Overthrust in Montana.
Uh-huh.
And people started looking into it, and they called it off approximately an hour before they actually touched the thing off.
Amazing.
They found out that they were going to do it, and the state capital of Helena is sitting on three major faults.
Oh, my. We were so naive then, you know? I mean, not that we're not now, right? Every moment, every generation, but every moment in time, everybody thinks, oh, we've got it all figured out. And then when we look back 20, 30 years, you go, boy, we were really stupid.
Well, they came real close to leveling the whole town of Helena, which is at that time was about 25,000 people, and I think they would have had a real egg on their face had that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then somebody else came up with the idea after the fact, says, okay, if this does work, we have a bunch of radioactive natural gas. We can't burn it.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's my two bits for today.
Yes. Thank you very much, Gary. Yeah, you could,
okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. You could burn it, actually. It's just that you would suffer the consequences of radiation for generations to come. House Speaker Denny Hastert. You know, he has been censured three times, or whatever the word is that they've used. They've used some, I think it was censure, they've used some very soft word, basically slapped him on the hand for three different, I would start to say crimes. Let's say ethical lapses that he has committed. Now, members of his staff are indicted for felonies. A grand jury is looking into his having committed a felony. He may well be himself indicted for this. And Joel Heffley, Republican of Colorado, who, by the way, represents Colorado Springs, home to more than 20 evangelical organizations, including Focus on the Family, James Dobson's, you know, multi-million-dollar media empire. Dobson, no slouch in the world of Christian fundraising, evangelical outreach, and political activity, conservative activity, let's say. He represents this group, and he's not been going along with the Republicans the way they like. He's been saying, hey, you know, delay does something wrong, we should criticize him for it. So Denny Hastert has a solution to this problem. Is the solution asking Tom DeLay to start behaving ethically? No, that would be a bit much for the Republicans. That's not going to happen. No, instead, they're talking about replacing Joel Heffley as the fellow who is the chairman of the House Ethics Committee, and replace him with Representative Lamar S. Smith. Now, who is Lamar S. Smith? Well, a few small clues. Number one, he wrote a check to Tom DeLay's defense fund, you know, defending himself against these charges of corruption and criminal behavior. And number two, he's also a congressman from Texas. So, an aide said Smith was favored for his knowledge of committee procedure. Yes. They will come up with some very nice stories about why this change is going to be made. But you just watch when Joel Heffley leaves his job on the House Ethics Committee and is replaced by Lamar Smith. It's all about turning the other way and paying absolutely no attention to Tom DeLay's activities here in the House of Representatives. and in Texas. Why? Well, because he's because of his what may well turn out to be felonious action, crimes committed against we the people. He has assured the Republican Party of a lock on the House of Representatives by illegally redistricting Texas. Remarkable. At the same time, that being sort of our Republican insight news, the Democrat insight news, what's going on with the Democratic Party? There's a battle going on for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party, which I've mentioned before. It's getting closer now. There's going to be four meetings of the what they call regional DNC member gatherings, Democratic National Committee. There will be one on January 8th in Atlanta. There will be one on the 15th in St. Louis. There will be one on the 22nd in Sacramento and one on the 29th in New York City. And there's a group that's going to be organizing road trips to these events so people can sign up and participate and make their voices heard. That group is drivingvotes.org, www.drivingvotes.org, worth checking out. And just a quick, this from mydd.org, or .com rather, from this blog, MyDD, by Jerome Armstrong. A nice summary here. He calls it the DNC Cattle Call Holiday Edition of who's on the roster here to end up as the head of the Democratic National Committee. I, of course, am strongly of the opinion that if we get another DLC DNC chairman, the Democratic Leadership Council being the bunch that Al Gore and Bill Clinton put together back in 92, thereabouts, to, how do you say it, move the party to the center is how they would say it. I would say put the Democratic Party in the pockets of the corporations. Now, you know, the caveat here is that they were doing this, in my opinion, in retrospect, with, you know, some success for this very reason. They were doing this as a survival measure, in their opinions. They thought they were doing the best thing. Basically, what they were seeing was that all the corporate money was going to the Republicans. The Republicans were getting, you know, in bed with the corporations. They were letting corporations write legislation. Big multinational corporate. When I say corporations, I'm not talking about the corner dry cleaner. I mean, there are millions of high quality, ethical, well run, small and medium sized corporations in the United States that deserve our praise and our respect, and are the engine that keeps this country going. But I'm talking about the very large corporations, the polluters, the power companies. The companies that have their hands out, the ones that get a good share of that $154 billion a year in corporate welfare that the government passes out. And increasingly these corporations, which traditionally had always, when they were politically active, had always split their money 50-50 between the Democrats and Republicans because they didn't want to be accused of being partisan, were realizing that the Republicans were the side that their bread was buttered on. The Republicans were acting in their interest, you know, going back to the days of McKinley. The Republican Party was once again becoming the party of big business, and the Democratic Party was the party of the average working person. Problem is, the average working person doesn't kick money into political parties. Only unions do. That is when the average working people get organized. And ever since Ronald Reagan declared war on organized labor back in 1980, when he first came into office, union membership had declined from 25% when Reagan came into office down to where it is now, the private workforce, it's around 7-8%. Organized labor is having the fight of its life. I mean, it's fighting for its survival, and by the way, needs your help. One of the most important things you can do is check. You go to www.aflcio.org or the UAW.org, Teamsters. Check out whatever union, UFCW, United Food and Commercial Workers, UFCW.org. Get close to the union that might be the closest to what you do. Find out what's up with these folks. Find out what they're doing. And if there's any kind of organizing campaign in your place of work, get in on it. But anyhow, as the rules were changed, dating back to 1947 when Taft-Hartley was passed, this was the beginning of the downward slide for not just labor, but for the American middle class, which is represented by the organized labor movement. As this downward slide began, in terms of membership, the ability of organized labor to throw money at politicians began to diminish. And in fact, Republicans were even passing laws making it easier for corporate unions, chambers of commerce, and lobbying groups to operate in secret and hand money to politicians, and harder for labor unions to do the same. And this is a process that has really picked up steam recently. So in 1992, Bill Clinton looks around and goes, hey, you know, the unions don't have the money they used to. Big corporations do. Walmart, look at the pile of money that they're sitting on. Look at all that money that Microsoft is sitting on. We need to get our fingers into some of that. And so let's create a group that says to corporations, we'll do your bidding. Just give us some of your money. And they created the Democratic Leadership Council, which is basically the Republican arm of the Democratic Party, in my opinion. I'm sure the DLC, and by the way, if there is anybody from the DLC listening to the program at this time, I would welcome a call from you. Feel free to call in and defend yourself and set me straight if I'm wrong on this. I don't believe I am. But in fact, probably we should get somebody on from the DLC. Let them try to explain themselves. Anyhow, about the only non-DLC candidate, there's a couple non-DLC candidates that are running for chairman of the Democratic National Committee, and they're worthy of note. The main ones are Howard Dean, Simon Rosenberg, and Donnie Fowler. Simon Rosenberg and Donnie Fowler are the two most active candidates, notes Jerome Armstrong. They're both reform candidates. Problem is, the more visible reform candidate, of course, is Howard Dean. Tim Romer is a DLC Democrat of sorts. He's a former defense contractor lobbyist. His latest claim to fame was that he was on the 9/11 Commission. Got him fairly high visibility. Got his name out there a lot. And he's been calling around, sending out letters of introduction to DNC members. And he's in favor of the GOP's attempts to wipe out or privatize Social Security. He says, let's move to the right on abortion. Former defense contractor lobbyist. And so what's going on is Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, who run the House Democrats, they have their own committees that need money. And so they're looking at Romer and thinking, this guy can help us. He can take some of the DNC funds, the money from the Democratic National Committee, and give it to us, to the ASDC. This is the Association of State Democratic Chairs. It's the three top Democrats from each state make up the ASDC. And interesting concept. Jim Blanchard, former Michigan governor, he is an energy lobbyist. Harold Ickes fading fast. So that's what's going on. Let's take a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894. Jason in Illinois on the line. Hey, Gary, or Jason, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'm a Republican. I'm trying to figure out what's your reason behind. You talk about drilling for oil causing the tsunamis, and I just don't see. I don't see how that's possible. I just can't, you know, I can't grasp that idea.
Yeah. Well, let's see. If you've got you take a bunch of clay and you make a ball that's about 6 inches in diameter and between your hands, and then you reach in there and you hollow out a big chunk of it, do you think if you squeeze it real hard that it'll crush?
Well, sure. But, I mean, you know, we've been drilling for oil for quite some time, and, you know, if that's the case, then it seems to me like there'd be a heck of a lot more of these disasters happening, you know.
Well, they are picking up in speed. And first of all, I'm not saying that this is absolutely the case. I was just speculating. But here's the point. Last 30 years, we've pulled more oil out of the ground than we have in the last 150. And the first commercial oil well was drilled in 1867 by Colonel Drake in Titusville, Pennsylvania. That's how long we've been drilling for oil, just 150 years for all practical purposes. And more than half of that has come out in the last 30 years. So,
well, sure. I mean, there's a lot more stuff that has to be run, with oil as the main source of.
Yeah. I mean, it may well just be a natural phenomenon. May well just be. I was just raising the question, Jason. Just raising the question. I'm not saying this is any kind of nasty plot on the part of the oil companies or anything like that. What I am saying, though, is I think that we need to learn more about these kind of processes. We're spectacularly ignorant about them. Jason,
right,
thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots, organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a wind feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Last week, the City Council in Salinas, California, capped a series of contentious budget debates with a decision to close all of its public libraries next summer, becoming the largest U.S. city to do so. Wind reporter Vinny Lombardo has more.
Charles Williamson called the council action shameful and says he's worried for kids whose parents can't afford the books, videos, and computers offered at the library.
We're making them stay poor and uneducated. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not what America's about.
It's a bad time.
Salinas Mayor Ana Cavallero.
Universally, it's a bad time for cities and county government in our country.
Like many small and mid-sized communities, Salinas is facing huge budget shortfalls and tough choices about which programs to axe. Over the past year, spending was cut by $8.2 million, and the city no longer pays for road repairs, trash pickup, and other services. Closing the three libraries will save about $3.5 million a year.
It's almost like amputations. We're taking apart pieces that we really should be providing.
Caballero says she's not proud of the decision to shut the libraries and blames reduced revenues and state budget takeaways. Sylvia Garcia, a Salinas librarian, doesn't think that's a good enough answer.
And because the monies have been mismanaged, the community is going to pay the price.
In last month's election, Salinas voters rejected Measures A and B, which, if passed, would have added up to $10 million annually to the general fund. Garcia says voters are being punished and wonders why the cuts weren't spread around.
There are many other departments within the city of Salinas, including fire and police, and yet the library is the one that was penalized the most.
While hiring of new police and fire personnel was put on hold, neither department experienced cuts. As for librarians, most are long-term and aren't sure what to expect after receiving their severance pay. Salinas residents will meet mid-January to discuss plans for a new tax initiative. For the Workers Independent News, I'm Vinny Lombardo.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Why does the sun go on shining?
And welcome back. Our quote for the day from Susan Sontag, who died yesterday at the age of 71. Be serious, be passionate, and wake up! Welcome to the Tom Hartman program, or welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Gary in Missouri, different Gary in Missouri on the line. Hey, Gary, welcome to the show. You are live and on the air. Don't listen to your radio. Listen to the phone. Okay, Gary, I'm putting you on hold. We're going to KC in Meridian, Mississippi. Oh, I had him backwards. This is Gary. Hey, okay. Gary. Okay, there you go. I'm sorry. I had my buttons reversed.
Okay. Anyway, I grew up in a small farm family in Iowa, and my dad was rigid conservative Republican.
Mm-hmm.
I heard nothing but bad about unions and all the corruption and violence and so forth.
Yeah.
I've grown older, and I'm 60 years old today. I
Happy birthday.
I'm sorry.
Now.
I recognize the good that they have done, and I think a lot of unions. I still am troubled by the corruption and the violence that goes to strikes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think everybody is, and that's why you have rules and laws to avoid that. You've got to put this in perspective. There is far more corruption in corporate America than there ever was in Union America.
You just don't see it.
Well, you do see it. I mean, Enron,
yeah.
Look at what happened. Global Crossing, I mean, it's in the business pages every day. Hundreds of millions, billions of dollars being wiped out. A theft of massive proportions, epic proportions. You know, 1 month's worth of crime in the corporate world in the United States right now equals probably a decade of all the union shenanigans. It's just that the corporate press, the pro-business press, every time some union does something wrong, they wave it around like a bloody shirt as long as they can. That's the bottom line. I mean, you know, if you get somebody, old Jimmy Hoffa, you know, in his corrupt days, should have been, you know, thrown in jail. And, in fact, they did. I mean, you know, Bobby Kennedy made it a crusade to get him. So, anyhow, I got to move along, KC. Thanks for bringing
that up.
Good point. Gary in Missouri, you're on. We've only got a few seconds left.
Okay, I'm KC.
Oh, you're KC. That's right. Okay, yeah. I got it backwards. Again.
Hey, that's all right.
Hey, KC.
I was just going to say, y'all were talking about the oil when you drain it out.
Yeah.
You got to have something to go back in it.
Yeah, I know.
But they do put something back in them holes.
They put water in a lot of them.
Yeah, mud. They make up a mud mixture and
right.
put it back up in there.
Right.
If they're doing their job right.
Yeah, but then, number one, they're not always doing the job right. Number two,
it's got
a different viscosity and a different density, and it does change the nature of the underground system.
Absolutely.
Whether or not that is going to be responsible for earthquakes, who knows? Who knows? But it's an interesting thing to speculate. We got a boogie here, KC. I appreciate it. You too. It's the end of the show here. For this hour.
To the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The path has been cleared for a judge to hear a class-action sexual discrimination complaint filed by female employees at the U.S. Mint. Filed by 32 female workers, the complaint alleges that managers at the Denver-based Mint use discrimination when considering job assignments, discipline, promotions, and terminations. In addition, the suit says women were subjected to a hostile working environment of sexual harassment. Damages for emotional abuse are expected to reach nearly $300,000 per employee. The Treasury Department filed for an appeal that was denied by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission on Monday.
Workers in the United States aren't the only ones with concerns about jobs being offshored to places like India and China. Amicus, the United Kingdom's largest manufacturing technical and skilled persons union, says that more than 12,000 British jobs were offshored in 2004. The union projects more than 18,000 additional jobs leaving by the end of next year. Companies insist that they are only moving low-paying processing jobs out of the UK. Amicus representatives say, however, that high-paying management jobs have also begun to move offshore. The union says Scotland has been hit especially hard because a high number of call centers operate there.
Employees at a major sugar producer went on strike yesterday after contract negotiations stalled. Nearly 650 Florida Crystal Corporation workers in Palm Beach County walked off the job over proposals to outsource the company's hauling jobs, eliminate overtime pay, and raise copays for health benefits. Represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, striking employees watched from the picket lines yesterday as non-union employees were bussed in to keep the plant running. The company says that the market is uncertain, and in order to remain competitive, it has to make some unpopular decisions. Both sides say they wish to return to the negotiation table as soon as possible.
Unlike the U.S. Justice Department, the European Union's Court of First Instance upheld a record $600 million fine against Microsoft for holding a monopoly in personal computer software. In addition, the computer giant will be required to reveal its Windows operating source code to the European Union and to allow third-party media players. In response to the ruling, Microsoft will offer a European version of the Windows operating system next month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Poverty in America is continuing to increase. According to the Census Bureau, there were 1.3 million more poor people in the U.S. in 2003. The poverty level is 12.5% of the population. In the 50s, it was 22%. Then the War on Poverty helped cut poverty to 12.1% by 1969. Poverty has gone up for 3 years in a row. Among children, the poverty rate is 16.2%. 10.4% of the elderly are poor. Black and Hispanic poverty rates are much higher than average. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Let me tell you a story of progressive progress. In 1939, two-thirds of America's senior citizens lived their golden years in cold, hard poverty. Just a decade later, that percentage was down to half. By 1959, it was only one-third, and today the number is less than 10%. That's progress. What's progressive about it is that this decline in poverty is the result of the New Deal's passage of our nation's landmark Social Security program.
Yes, the very same program now under attack by Wall Street wolves and congressional opportunists of both parties who insist that Social Security is doomed to failure and facing an imminent financial crisis. Horse duties. First, this is a program that actually works, providing the modicum of income so our gray-haired citizens have a basic level of decent living when their earning years are over. Second, Social Security is a model of efficiency, requiring only a single percent in administrative costs. Compare that to the insurance corporations that suck out one-third of our health care dollars to pay for their corporate bureaucracies, executive salaries, marble palaces, and advertising. But no, cry the chicken littlers, Social Security is going broke. Hogwash. Without changing anything, Social Security is financially sound for the next 40 years. Name me a corporation that can claim that. Yet the Bushites, on behalf of Wall Street finaglers, seek to privatize this public treasure, pushing people to put their Social Security nest egg into the stock market. Hello. These are the same investment geniuses who only 3 years ago would have advised you to invest in Enron, a stock that fell from $97 a share to 57 cents in only 1 year. This is Jim Hightower saying, I say no one should be allowed to reform Social Security unless they actually need it.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com. The website, if you want to drop into our live chat room or leave messages on the message board. To pontificate, rant, rave, say hello, join one of the finest communities on the internet. Here we are every day, 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, lobbying smart bombs at bunker mentalities. Those being mostly in the Bush administration. Did you catch this story? This was in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. It was a letter to the editor. Right, just a remark. This is Information Clearinghouse printed this. News you won't find on CNN. And it's Reva Rasmussen, lives in St. Paul, Minnesota. And she wrote into her local newspaper, the Star Tribune. And she tells the story. The Naval Reserve found my resume on Monster.com where I posted it in August 2001. Well, that's interesting point number one. The Naval Reserve is going back to 3-year-old resumes looking for potential recruits. Then she goes on to say, with enthusiasm, the email from the Navy declares, quote, one of the greatest benefits of joining our force is that you won't have to sacrifice your personal life to serve. Actually, given what's going on in Iraq right now, the emphasis should have been different in that sentence. It should have been, one of the greatest benefits of joining our force is that you won't have to sacrifice your personal life to serve. But you may. Danielle goes on to say, your training sessions will almost always be with the Naval Reserve Unit located closest to your home. Now, there's a magic word in there. It's called always. Because you may be doing training in Fallujah. Yes, says Reva Rasmussen, and pigs can fly, and stop-loss orders are working so well they don't need to pull up any more reserves and send them to Iraq. Right. She says, well, they do say almost always closest to your home. They do give themselves some wiggle room. Anyhow, she goes on to point out that she is 54 years old. This information easily gleaned from her resume, which the Navy found on Monster.com. And she says, so if I show up at the recruiting office with my gray hair, wearing my bifocals, popping calcium tablets, will they sigh with relief, promise me all my trainings will be near my grandchildren, and sign me up? Unlikely. She says, I know I can't trust this military. I know they're misleading me and hoping I won't notice, but why are they trying to recruit an old person? Why is the military desperate? Reva, you're a year older than I am. I'm not sure we're old people yet. But it does seem a little strange. You know, I thought I was finished with all that military stuff back in the 60s. And fortunately, I think I am. But Fred McCann in New York City sent me an email about our NLP class from yesterday, our discussion. He pulled some really fascinating insights. The last couple of weeks, next week we're going to talk, I believe, about submodality shifts. Now that sounds really didactic and weird. Now, what it is how you can take an experience and change its meaning, both for yourself or other people. This is used very often in a therapeutic way, but it's also used in political campaigns. We're going to get into that next week. But yesterday we were talking about another dimension of NLP, and I mentioned Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich. I mentioned it, in fact, this week, and during our last NLP session, which was the week before last. Last week we skipped it for the holidays. And this had inspired Fred to go out and buy a copy of Think and Grow Rich, the book that Napoleon Hill wrote back in the 1930s. Which is still probably one of the finest self-help books out there. I think probably the finest is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. But for goal setting and things, Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich is a pretty brilliant book. And I just have to share with you, he excerpts some pieces from this book and points out how different people who were trying to get rich in the 1930s, when Napoleon Hill wrote his book. He did his research in the 1920s, published the book, as I recall, in 1934, which was the depths of the Depression. How differently business people viewed business in the pre-Reagan era versus the post-Reagan era, Reagan being the dividing point in American history, when the middle class began to collapse, starting in the 1980s, business CEOs went from averaging 30, 40, 50, 60 times the average worker's salary to hundreds of times the average worker's salary. Huge ripoffs began in corporate America. And the war on organized labor just picked up steam, full tilt boogie. And this offers some just remarkable insights into how business people have traditionally viewed business in America. So I have to share this with you. Fred wrote such a brilliant note here to me. I want to share the whole thing with you. He says, I was doing some research on the train ride into the city this morning. Fred lives in Manhattan. Studying Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. One thing that jumped out in particular is that Hill attributes the potential success and the everyday freedoms we have as Americans to capital. Furthermore, he also counts the, quote, freedom to accumulate and own without fear of molestation all the property we can accumulate, end quote, as a basic freedom of Americans, page 112. Now, that would fit in nicely with the view of the libertarians and the cons. One of our freedoms is the freedom to own things. And I would say the view of liberals and progressives as well. I mean, Americans. This is an American principle. We don't have from each according to his ability to each according to his means in this country. We don't have communism. But what's interesting, notes Fred, what's interesting, what's more interesting, he says, is Hill's definition of capital. This is from page 112 of whichever edition of Hill's book Fred was reading. Highly organized, intelligent groups of men who plan ways and means of using money efficiently for the good of the public and profitability to themselves, end quote. This is from Napoleon Hill. Then Fred comments, Hill's philosophy is inseparably rooted in the conservative mythos of pulling oneself up by their bootstraps, but it defines conservatism in the context of social responsibility. It even goes so far as to define capital as the exercise of wealth and for the good of the public before self-enrichment. How has modern conservatism lost sight of this? Well, it might have to do with the 100+ million bucks that Rush Limbaugh got. This is ultimate, and Billy Towson leaving Congress and making, you know, over $1 million a year working for the big pharma industry, and on it goes. Right? He says this is ultimately compatible with the goals of progressives. Hill goes on further to define who capitalists are and what they do. This from page 113 of Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. Quote, these groups consist of scientists, educators, chemists, inventors, business analysts, publicity men, transportation experts, accountants, lawyers, doctors, and both men and women who have specialized knowledge in all fields of industry and business. They pioneer, experiment, and blaze new trails in new fields of endeavor. They support colleges, hospitals. They what? They support colleges, hospitals, public schools, build good roads, publish newspapers, pay most of the cost of government, and take care of the multitudinous details essential to human progress, end quote. This from a conservative, a wealthy conservative, good friend of Andrew Carnegie's in the 1930s, Napoleon Hill. Pay most of the cost of government, public schools, hospitals, human progress? Fred McKenna writes, how can we reconcile this vision of conservatism against the so-called conservatives who now run every branch of the federal government and control the public airwaves? One of these things is not like the other, and one of these things is not the same. Fred notes, I learned that from Sesame Street Public Broadcasting. It's well said, Fred. Well said. And you know, how do we reconcile this vision of conservatism? Well, what I would say is that these modern folks who call themselves conservatives are not conservatives. They are kleptocrats. And they are living in a kleptocracy. Klep is the K-L-E-P-T, is the, I believe it's Greek, root word for kleptomaniac. And it means thief. A kleptomaniac, of course, is a person who can't resist stealing things, people who compulsively shoplift. A certain actress who we won't further embarrass by naming here, who kept getting busted for shoplifting, for example, a kleptomaniac, a mental illness. It's a variation on obsessive compulsive disorder where the imprint is stealing. And I would suggest that much of American business nowadays has been taken over by kleptomaniacs, and we have created now, much to our detriment. I mean, this is one of the things that has really and truly harmed America, is we have created a kleptocracy in government. We've been through this before, by the way. It happened in the 1830s and 1840s. When the Democratic Party became corrupt and led to the rise to the destruction of the Whigs and the rise of the Republican Party in the 1850s, the election of Abraham Lincoln as a reform candidate, throw out the kleptocrats, throw out the bums. Read Carl Sandburg's biography of Lincoln. It is a huge eye-opener about what things were like back then. Or read my book, Unequal Protection. I liberally borrow from Carl Sandburg. And so it happened in the 1830s, 1840s. The Democrats were the kleptocrats. It happened again in the 1870s through the 1920s. Then the Republicans were the kleptocrats. So corrupt that big business was running government and using government to enrich itself. And we saw a rise of a new aristocracy, a new hereditary aristocracy in the United States. We call them the robber barons, the Carnegies, the Mellons, the Morgans, the Rockefellers, and so on. And then, you know, Roosevelt sort of slowed that down. And even Eisenhower, liberals like, yes, Eisenhower was a liberal, called himself a liberal from time to time. Slowed this down, but Reagan then just pulled the plug and said, time to go back. And now we've got Karl Rove saying McKinley was the guy we model ourselves after. Yeah, right. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, TomHartman.com, the website. And yesterday, Brian, I believe it was Brian in New Jersey, called in and said he was in the didgeridoo business. And I mentioned my daughter, who now lives in Portland, Oregon, and works part-time at KBOO, KBOO Radio in Portland, and is on the air there, in fact, from time to time. Kareth, and Kareth is with us. And here is her didge. So 10 seconds of didgeridoo music from Kareth Hartman. Here you go. Okay, thank you, Kareth. Great, well done. Say hi.
Hi.
There you go. Well done. A didgeridoo, this is a contraption. It's a stick. It's a particular type of thorn bush that grows in Australia. I actually bought that one in Australia. And the termites allow termites to hollow it out. They eat all the soft stuff out of the center, and you end up with this long tube, and you kind of on one end of it, and that sound comes out the other end, and the Aborigines believe that they can call spirits with it. And it's a musical instrument. I mean, there's albums of it out and all sorts of stuff. So you have now, first on the Tom Hartman radio program, didgeridoo music. Speaking of a first, the Bush administration would like you to believe, and has been saying repeatedly, that implying certainly, and sometimes outright saying, surrogates of the administration, shall we say, during the election, that Osama bin Laden wanted John Kerry elected. In fact, Fox News, Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org, they have a whole page on this. And it was just, you know, time after time after time, mostly on Fox News, but some of them on CNN, some of them on the major network news shows, where people said, well, you know, Osama wants John Kerry elected, blah, blah, and nobody challenged it. Well, now here comes the rest of the story, to paraphrase Paul Harvey. This from the Boston Globe. Actually, apparently they're reprinting this in the New York Times, because the copyright notice down the bottom is the New York Times company. But anyhow, I have the Boston Globe version of it. French journalists held hostage for 4 months in Iraq. You will recall there were a couple of, you know, France doesn't have any soldiers over there, but there were a couple of French reporters who got captured, who got snatched back during this last summer. And all of France was very concerned about these folks, and there were these efforts to get them back and this and that. And there's a big stink going on, in fact, right now in France about whether or not Chirac paid a bounty or a, what do you call it, a bribe isn't the word. When you pay to get somebody out, a ransom, that's the word, whether or not Chirac paid a ransom to get these guys out. And nobody knows yet. But in any case, there's this whole hoop-de-doop about this. But the French journalists have granted a few interviews, and they were being held by a group calling itself the Islamic Army in Iraq. And here's the story. This is it just straight up. French journalists held hostage for 4 months in Iraq said their militant captors told them they wanted, this being the captors, they wanted President George W. Bush to win re-election. In a four-page account of their ordeals, one of the reporters, Georges Malnembrough, also wrote that they saw several other hostages who were later decapitated. The journalist said their captors viewed foreign businessmen working in Iraq as enemies. One of the captors from the group calling itself the Islamic Army in Iraq said Bush's re-election would boost their cause, Malnembrough wrote in Friday's edition of Le Figaro, the French daily he works for. He quoted his captor as saying, quote, we want Bush because with him the American troops will stay in Iraq, and that way we will be able to develop. I've been saying this all along. We reached the point about a month after Bush's mission accomplished speech. We reached the point where we were inciting civil war, not helping, where we became an irritant rather than an assistance. We are no longer keeping the peace. We are playing defense. And that is a disaster. That means it's time to leave. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The path has been cleared for a judge to hear a class-action sexual discrimination complaint filed by female employees at the U.S. Mint. Filed by 32 female workers, the complaint alleges that managers at the Denver-based Mint use discrimination when considering job assignments, discipline, promotions, and terminations. In addition, the suit says women were subjected to a hostile working environment of sexual harassment. Damages for emotional abuse are expected to reach nearly $300,000 per employee. The Treasury Department filed for an appeal that was denied by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission on Monday.
Workers in the United States aren't the only ones with concerns about jobs being offshored to places like India and China. Amicus, the United Kingdom's largest manufacturing technical and skilled persons union, says that more than 12,000 British jobs were offshored in 2004. The union projects more than 18,000 additional jobs leaving by the end of next year. Companies insist that they are only moving low-paying processing jobs out of the UK. Amicus representatives say, however, that high-paying management jobs have also begun to move offshore. The union says Scotland has been hit especially hard because a high number of call centers operate there.
Employees at a major sugar producer went on strike yesterday after contract negotiations stalled. Nearly 650 Florida Crystal Corporation workers in Palm Beach County walked off the job over proposals to outsource the company's hauling jobs, eliminate overtime pay, and raise copays for health benefits. Represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, striking employees watched from the picket lines yesterday as non-union employees were bussed in to keep the plant running. The company says that the market is uncertain, and in order to remain competitive, it has to make some unpopular decisions. Both sides say they wish to return to the negotiation table as soon as possible.
Unlike the U.S. Justice Department, the European Union's Court of First Instance upheld a record $600 million fine against Microsoft for holding a monopoly in personal computer software. In addition, the computer giant will be required to reveal its Windows operating source code to the European Union and to allow third-party media players. In response to the ruling, Microsoft will offer a European version of the Windows operating system next month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Poverty in America is continuing to increase. According to the Census Bureau, there were 1.3 million more poor people in the U.S. in 2003. The poverty level is 12.5% of the population. In the 50s, it was 22%. Then the War on Poverty helped cut poverty to 12.1% by 1969. Poverty has gone up for 3 years in a row. Among children, the poverty rate is 16.2%. 10.4% of the elderly are poor. Black and Hispanic poverty rates are much higher than average. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. You are in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire. No passes necessary. You don't have to sign any loyalty pledges. You don't have to prove that you're a member of the Republican Party or even the Democratic Party or even the Green Party. All are welcome. It's time, you know, let's do a conservative. It's been a while since we've had a conservative alert here. Right now, this is from conservativealerts.com. Right now, conservatives have a chance to win our first battle in Washington before the new year even begins.
We won the presidency. We won the House. We won the Senate. But unless we take action now, we're going to lose any chance of getting conservative judges through the new Senate, because an ultra-liberal Republican is about to take control of the Senate Judiciary Committee unless we stop him. This, the conservatives say, that senator, who is this? Who is this evil senator that the conservatives are so concerned about that they're blast emailing to millions of people, do something about it now? Who could this man be? It's Republican Arlen Specter, whom the National Review called the worst Republican senator. Specter says he was troubled by Mr. Bush's announcement that the president was resubmitting the names of several conservative nominees. How dare he! He must be stopped! That was in all caps, by the way, in the news release. All caps. He must be stopped! Send your, all caps, faxes now, all caps, to all of the GOP senators' district offices while they are home for the holidays. They say, this evil man, this Arlen Specter, he's a supporter of abortion on demand. He advocates racial preferences. He's an opponent of much-needed tort reform. He's a firm friend of the United Nations International Criminal Court. You name the left-wing pet project, and he's in favor of it. Specter is a bastion of old-line tax-and-spend liberalism. See, they want to replace this with borrow-and-spend conservatism. Actually, they are replacing it. It's not that they want to. Who helped slash the Bush administration's tax cuts by $250 billion in 2001. Boy, we should be thanking Arlen Specter for that. That much less debt that our kids are going to be stuck with. They go on to point out, in January 2001, Specter complained on a TV program that some nominees for the Supreme Court were reluctant to take clear positions on Roe v. Wade, and he said he may have to start withholding his support in such cases. Can anyone say litmus test? These guys, they're absolutely hysterical. One of the main reasons why conservatives worked so hard to reelect George W. Bush and to increase the Republican majority in the U.S. Senate was to give the president the opportunity to nominate and get approved judicial nominees who would uphold the Constitution. And by the way, while you're at it, sending your blast faxes to your member of Congress telling them to prevent Arlen Specter from being the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, they would like you to send them some money. Yeah. So our conservative alert for the day from conservativealerts.com, one of my favorite wild, wacky, woolly, and wonderful websites out there. Interesting stuff. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you would like to call in on this or any other topic. I mean, a bunch of Iraq stuff here I want to get into. Iraq seems to be the tsunami is pretty rough. We talked about that in the first hour. But the situation in Iraq really is an oppression. I mean, this really is something that has the potential to destabilize it, not just the potential, already has destabilized the world in a way that has made it a dramatically more dangerous place, a much worse place for the United States. We are far less safe as a consequence of this insane Bush administration policy of preemptive war against non-threats. And now they're trying to reinvent this as, it had nothing to do with WMDs. It wasn't about weapons of mass destruction. That's not why we went in.
Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun. It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Now, just forget I said that, he's saying. Now, we're actually there to promote democracy. Democracy, yes, that's what we want, democracy. Yes, democracy. Long history of democracy being shoved down people's throats with the barrel of a gun. It works real well. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you would like to be on the line. Chris in Charlotte, North Carolina is on. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, what's going on?
I'm here. You're there.
It's kind of strange how like people say that they want Kerry to get elected, because it seems like Bush has done all of Osama bin Laden's work for him.
Yeah.
He wanted the troops out of Saudi Arabia, and before, like, he was trying to rally people to get rid of Saddam Hussein. And now that Saddam Hussein is gone, now, like, the whole, like,
Yeah, let's make sure, Chris, let's make sure that our listeners know who the he is that you're talking about here. The he who wanted all of the U.S. troops out of Saudi Arabia was Osama bin Laden. In fact, in 1998, he published an article or a letter in the New York Times, or they published it, in which he said that he would declare war on the United States if we didn't get our troops out of Saudi Arabia. And Bush just pulled... And Bush just pulled them out last year, finally. Yeah. And Osama, after he left Afghanistan, went back to Saudi Arabia and tried to gather his own private army in Saudi Arabia and mass them on the Iraqi border to attack Saddam Hussein. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. That was the thing that caused the Saudi royal family to banish him from the kingdom, to exile him. And so he had to go to Sudan. Whoa. Say that again.
And he got what he wanted, and he got people to hate us still.
Yeah, I think you have to speak a little louder, Chris, because...
Osama bin Laden got what he wanted, and he got the Arabs to hate us.
Yeah, absolutely.
He got rid of Saddam Hussein.
This is a classic case.
Out of Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
I mean, like, you know, like, Bush did his work for him.
Yes, Bush did absolutely everything Osama wanted. It was a classic case of, please, Brer Bear, don't throw me in that briar patch.
Exactly.
And, we did. And George W. Bush has been the best friend Osama bin Laden could have asked for and hasn't managed to track him down either, by the way. I mean, you know, this is a six-foot guy on a camel with a dialysis machine, six-foot-four guy.
Exactly.
And we can read a license plate in Pakistan, but we can't find Osama bin Laden. What's wrong with this picture?
They don't want to find him.
I don't think so.
You know, it comes down to it. Because, like, I think they're thinking, like, you know, they got the fields there. They got, like, a nice market there with people who don't make a whole lot, you know, by the hour. You know what I mean?
Well, here's the problem, Chris. As soon as we get Osama bin Laden, as soon as Bush has got his boogeyman, he will appear to have won the war on terror. And people will start saying, why are we giving George W. Bush all this extra money and all this extra presidential power that comes along with being president during time of war? I mean, during a time of war, the president actually has additional powers that he doesn't normally have. And Bush has claimed these by claiming that we are at war. And if he captures Osama bin Laden, there are a lot of folks who are going to say, okay, we've got bin Laden. In fact, there were people who were saying this when we got Sheikh Khalid Mohammed, who was actually the mastermind of 9/11. We actually had in custody the guy who planned and organized and executed 9/11.
But you forget, Tom, it's the war on terror.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? It's the war on terror. Like, it's kind of like a unending war, which means that, like, you know, like, you're never safe.
Yeah, this is, in my opinion, why we are elevating Zarqawi, why, you know, he's in three places at once and all this kind of thing. We are trying to create a new boogeyman because bin Laden just hasn't been that effective an old boogeyman anymore. And
Republicans are great at it.
Yeah, you've got to...
I mean, they really are good at it.
It's the communists and J. Edgar Hoover all over again. It's create a boogeyman, create a straw man, you know, some truth to it, but inflate it all out of proportion. And thus use that to gain power. It's an old song. It's
that's
an old
Hitler
song.
Said.
Yeah, yeah.
You tell the biggest lie as long as there's a little truth in it. And Goering said, all you have to do is make them think they're being attacked.
Yeah, and in fact, Hitler said a big lie will work better than a little lie. And if it's repeated enough, it will always be believed. And sure enough, here we are. Chris, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it.
And like I'm getting your book.
Great. Hope you enjoy it.
Thomas Jefferson, man, like, that's a great find. I don't know if you've been, like, into that guy for a long time or not, but I was like, holy crud.
Yeah.
It kind of wasn't what I thought.
Yeah, Jefferson's amazing. Jefferson, the way I got into that, we bought a house that had over the garage, a bunch of boxes of books that were all moldy and ruined and falling apart. And among them was a 20-volume set of the collected works of Thomas Jefferson published back in 1904, and they were just in terrible shape. And I started reading these things and got addicted. And here, 4 years later, I came up for breath, and this was last year, and wrote this book, What Would Jefferson Do? Guess what is, speaking of Osama, speaking of what we have created, speaking of George W. Bush doing the work of the fundamentalists, theocrats, radicals in the Middle East, guess what has become the hottest-selling DVD, the hottest-selling video, a videotape or DVD in the Middle East? Now, this is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. This is from Globe Intel, an article by Gordon Thomas. Hostages Margaret Hassan and Kenneth Bigley, you will recall they were both beheaded. The videos of their final moments of their lives before being murdered are the top videos for sale in Iraq right now and in most of the other Gulf states. So great was the demand for the videos that many shops sold out. At the equivalent of 50 pence a copy, 50 pence would be, about a buck and a half, they are endlessly played. They are now top sellers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Iran. They are marketed as the, quote, top of the horror, end quote, videos. The harrowing videos are a powerful weapon for the minds of Islamic fundamentalists. And then he goes on to point out, and this is the really interesting part of this, a grisly form of recruiting for still more people to join Al-Qaeda is really what these things are. He says, from the video packaging to the opening and closing shots, each video is as skilled as any pornography. There is mood-building music, a well-written commentary, and clever camera angles, said one analyst. The consensus is that they were all shot by professional filmmakers. The technical standards of lighting and sound are high. It is also clear that the hostage is carefully positioned and the words he or she is given to say have been carefully scripted, said the analysts. The analysts have decided each video carries the same signature of a skilled director. Quote, we are certain he's either gone to a film school or had training with an Arab network. He knows how to make the horror build slowly. He knows when to cut away from a hostage to one of his executioners. He knows how to tease his audience by not revealing which of the hooded men will be the killer. The shock when the execution happens is all that much greater, said the analyst. These horrendous parodies of Islamic justice now outsell any pirated Hollywood horror movie in Iraq, Afghanistan, or Pakistan. Many of the videos also contain images of American tortures at Abu Ghraib and are marketed in the name of, quote, justification, end quote. Videos are given the message that what the enemy does, we are entitled to do. A website that posts beheadings claimed that the Bigley and Hassan videos have received close to 1 million hits so far. George W. Bush, the best recruiter for Osama bin Laden, and the best promoter for Osama bin Laden's film company. Alice in Humboldt County, California, on the line. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
Oh, that's horrible.
It is.
I can't imagine that. Anyway, Tom, I think you are just about to figure out how criminal our White House has become.
Just about to figure it out, Alice?
Yeah, that's what... they brought us 911.
Yeah. Well, they certainly allowed 911 to happen. I am absolutely and utterly convinced of that these guys not only failed in their watch, but went out of their way to fail in their watch.
That's right.
And you know, whether they expected it to be as horrific as it was or not, I don't know. You know, I don't know the details of it, but there is this... The malfeasance and failures of this administration is criminal, in my opinion. And then they're giving these guys medals of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is. So anyhow, yeah. was that your point, Alice?
Yes, that's my point.
Okay, well said.
Can you hang in there?
I'll do that, and you too, man. You know, keep passing the word along. Tag, you're it. You're one of our great warriors and our wise elders, and I very much appreciate you being with us, Alice, and spreading the good word. So now, the American soldiers. Here you've got Osama on his side, or the Islamic fundamentalists. They're promoting their version of propaganda with these videos. And now on the U.S. side, we have decided that we are going to create our own 24-hour television channel just for our soldiers, so that we can control very carefully everything that they see and hear. but I thought they were Americans. I thought they had free access to the press. No, not according to Don Rumsfeld. I thought they were entitled to free information and debate. No, not according to Don Rumsfeld. Well, you know, what about Armed Forces Radio? The only commentator they allow is Rush Limbaugh. This article from Guy Taylor in the Washington Times yesterday, day before yesterday. The Pentagon has created its own 24-hour channel to cut out the middleman, the national media, in covering news events at the headquarters of the world's most powerful military. Created with $6 million in congressional funds, the Pentagon Channel earlier this year began airing full coverage of defense press conferences and other programming targeted at U.S. troops. The channel is picked up by the existing American Forces Radio and Television Service, AFRTS, which is shown on U.S. military bases worldwide, and also gets sent by satellite to bases inside the United States. Isn't that sweet? If you're in the military, you will only know what Don Rumsfeld wants you to know. Could be why all those soldiers are thinking that we are still there for something that had to do with weapons of mass destruction or 9/11. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman. People who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Descending into volcanoes and chasing tornadoes, all in a day's work for scientists in a new book from National Geographic. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Marie Edmonds and Richard Hurd climb into active volcanoes. Josh Werman chases tornadoes, and Ross Stein turned a childhood earthquake into a lifelong pursuit. All four are scientists, and they're profiled in a new book called Forces of Nature. Author Catherine O'Neill Grace says the book is meant to capture the adventurous side of Earth science for kids age 9 to 14.
one of the things that they're thinking about is, what am I going to do when I'm an adult? And I'm not sure that science is always depicted in children's books as something that can be really exciting, like riding in a helicopter and getting so close to the hot lava in a volcano that the paint literally boils on the outside of the helicopter. So we tried to convey that science is something tremendously exciting, and that kids, when they're looking forward to a career, can think about not only the technology aspects and the intellectual aspects, but also the adventure aspects.
As a writer of children's books, Grace likes to probe topics that kids find both frightening and thrilling. She says knowledge can calm kids' fears about the likelihood of an earthquake or tornado, as well as equip them with steps to take if one does happen. But Grace is most interested in persuading young people to pursue the sciences.
I hope that kids, especially girls, will think seriously about science as a career and think about what that means in terms of the kinds of work they should do in high school and college. I'm hoping that my book in its own small way can show that science and math aren't boring.
The book Forces of Nature is a companion volume to a new IMAX film of the same name. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
And the beat goes on. Beat goes on.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Patrick in Albuquerque, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Patrick, are they has Governor Richardson yet come around to figuring out that there might be might have been some fraud in the election in your state?
No, it's still a mess. I don't understand Governor Richardson. I don't know why he's not getting on board with this totally. Probably because he doesn't want to, you know, make it look improper or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. There's a lot of political cowardice out there on the part of the Democrats. They're just afraid to. I don't know if it's denial that they're afraid to acknowledge the possibility that there could be Republicans who are actually criminals, who are actually, you know, people who are actually engaged in crimes. Or if maybe they think that the Republicans have already won and they're just hoping that they can have some small seat at the table. You know, may I have some crumbs, Mr. President, please?
That's what it seems like, doesn't it?
It increasingly is, and it's why I keep saying the only hope for the Democratic Party is to put Howard Dean in charge of it. But that's a whole other rant. Anyhow,
I agree with that.
What'd you call about, Patrick?
Shake it up. Well, I had a quote I'd like to share with you. I somebody's probably shared it with you before, but it seems kind of proper to do it now.
Okay.
The quote goes, of course the people don't want war.
Oh, yeah.
After all, it's leaders of the country who determine the policy. And it's always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it's a democracy, a fascist dictatorship, or a parliament, or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to greater danger. Hermann Göring at the Nuremberg trials.
Right, although actually it wasn't at the Nuremberg trials that he said that. He said that to the psychiatrist who was interviewing him for the Nuremberg trials.
Who
later wrote a book about it, in which you will find that quote. I forget the title of the book and the name of the psychiatrist, but that's where the quote came from, is from the psychiatric interviews with Göring. He actually didn't say that at the trials, but close enough, and it is an accurate quote, at least according to the psychiatrist.
Well, if you know your World War II history, doesn't it just seem eerie that it seems like the Bush regime is taking, you know, using it as a playbook?
Yeah, if you want to really see how much they're taking it as a playbook, read Chapter 6 of Book 1 of Mein Kampf.
Yes.
It's the chapter on how to do propaganda, and they laid out the 2004 Bush campaign. It's just laid out right there. It is. It really is scary.
It's like Rove, you know, like he had read that and memorized it or something.
I think so. I really do. Patrick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. These are strange times, but. You know, when the going gets tough, the weird turn pro, right? We've got to get active. We have to get out there and get our voices heard and bring back democracy to the United States of America.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The path has been cleared for a judge to hear a class-action sexual discrimination complaint filed by female employees at the U.S. Mint. Filed by 32 female workers, the complaint alleges that managers at the Denver-based Mint use discrimination when considering job assignments, discipline, promotions, and terminations. In addition, the suit says women were subjected to a hostile working environment of sexual harassment. Damages for emotional abuse are expected to reach nearly $300,000 per employee. The Treasury Department filed for an appeal that was denied by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission on Monday.
Workers in the United States aren't the only ones with concerns about jobs being offshored to places like India and China. Amicus, the United Kingdom's largest manufacturing technical and skilled persons union, says that more than 12,000 British jobs were offshored in 2004. The union projects more than 18,000 additional jobs leaving by the end of next year. Companies insist that they are only moving low-paying processing jobs out of the UK. Amicus representatives say, however, that high-paying management jobs have also begun to move offshore. The union says Scotland has been hit especially hard because a high number of call centers operate there.
Employees at a major sugar producer went on strike yesterday after contract negotiations stalled. Nearly 650 Florida Crystal Corporation workers in Palm Beach County walked off the job over proposals to outsource the company's hauling jobs, eliminate overtime pay, and raise copays for health benefits. Represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, striking employees watched from the picket lines yesterday as non-union employees were bussed in to keep the plant running. The company says that the market is uncertain, and in order to remain competitive, it has to make some unpopular decisions. Both sides say they wish to return to the negotiation table as soon as possible.
Unlike the U.S. Justice Department, the European Union's Court of First Instance upheld a record $600 million fine against Microsoft for holding a monopoly in personal computer software. In addition, the computer giant will be required to reveal its Windows operating source code to the European Union and to allow third-party media players. In response to the ruling, Microsoft will offer a European version of the Windows operating system next month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Poverty in America is continuing to increase. According to the Census Bureau, there were 1.3 million more poor people in the U.S. in 2003. The poverty level is 12.5% of the population. In the 50s, it was 22%. Then the war on poverty helped cut poverty to 12.1% by 1969. Poverty has gone up for 3 years in a row. Among children, the poverty rate is 16.2%. 10.4% of the elderly are poor. Black and Hispanic poverty rates are much higher than average. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Costco is different, and that really POs Wall Street. The nationwide retailer treats its 100,000 clerks, forklift operators, and other workers as valued assets to be invested in and nurtured. Unlike the Walmart model of paying the least you can to rank-and-file employees, squeezing the last ounce of toil out of each of them, busting any whisper of unionization, and causing a workforce turnover like employees are nothing but disposable coffee cups. How different is Costco? Starting pay is $10 an hour. Workers typically earn $40,000 a year after 3 years on the job. The company covers 92% of employees' health care costs, and the Teamsters Union provides strong bargaining representation for the workers. Also, while CEOs at other major corporations average 531 times the pay of their lowest-paid employees, Costco's top boss takes only 10 times the pay of his typical rank-and-filer. His annual salary is $350,000, compared to some $5 million a year hauled off by Walmart's honcho. From day one, says the chief financial officer at Costco, we've run the company with the philosophy that if we pay better than average, provide a salary people can live on, have a positive environment and good benefits, we'll be able to hire better people. They'll stay longer and be more efficient. It works. Costco's turnover is minimal, its profits are consistently strong, and its stock price has quadrupled in 10 years. But Wall Street analysts are sourpusses when it comes to this remarkable corporate maverick. Costco's benefits are overly generous, sniffs one Wall Streeter, asserting the stockholders could do even better if only Costco would conform to the Walmart model. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Costco is richly profitable for stockholders, while also providing middle-class possibilities for our communities. Isn't that the best model of all?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, who is it? Willie Nelson or Johnny Cash? A big debate here. Allison Krauss in the chat room right now. You can get to it by going to TomHartman.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Premium Talk Radio for high-octane brains. Yesterday on the program, I mentioned the horrific number of 100,000 dead in Iraq. It is the British Medical Journal, the equivalent of the American Medical Association. And that was a study that was where they didn't actually go out and count bodies, but they estimated, you know, based on the types of hostilities, population centers, you know, they did some pretty good science, actually, and came up with this number that probably about 100,000 people had died as a result of the invasion. IraqBodyCount.net, Mike Wolfsey points out to me, is perhaps a more reliable source for actual numbers. They say that we have killed 16,000 innocent civilians so far, and that is an absolutely solid number based on actual counts, you know, going into hospitals, looking at, you know, it's a real solid number. So I stand corrected to the extent that I may have been wrong. I also mentioned that in the context of the tsunami. And I just, you know, I mentioned this in the first hour of the program. I know some of our programs, some of our stations don't carry all 3 hours of the program. I just want to mention this. And beyond that, of course, people tune in and tune out. And not everybody, of course, just sits and listens for 3 hours to one particular show. Although it's surprising that, you know, many people do, actually. But a lot of people don't. So, you know, people get in their cars, they listen for a little bit. So I just wanted to share with you this one small bit of information, assuming I can find it. I've got it. It's here in my stack somewhere. Well, it's not there. I wanted to recommend a couple of charities. Here we are. If you want to participate in helping. Now, the United States has committed $15 million to aid and added a $20 million loan. Bringing it to a total of $35 million. This is $40 million less than George W. Bush is spending on his coronation the week after next. But in any case, that's not to diminish it. I mean, you know, $15,000 plus $15 million plus $20 million in loans is not chicken feed. And it's a good start. But clearly it's going to take a lot more than that. And as speaking as somebody who has spent the better part of 27 years now involved on a part-time basis and for some years on a full-time basis with an international relief organization where I have actually been on the ground in third world countries in disaster scenarios and situations and have hung out and sat in restaurants and bars and famine sites and prisons and slept in jail cells with people from other international relief organization. I can tell you there are some really great folks out there and some really great organizations, and there are some that I would like to keep my distance from. And I just want to recommend three that from personal experience I know these are really and truly good people, and if you send them money, it's going to be well spent. It is not going to go for overhead. It's not going to go for PR and marketing. It's going, you know, the majority of it is actually going to reach the people you intend for it to reach. And these three that I recommend are, number one, Oxfam, which started nearly 30 years ago in Oxford, England, as the Oxford Famine Relief Fund. And now there's the international Oxfam, which I believe is oxfam.org. But here in the United States, oxfamamerica.org. And they have set up a program. You can contribute money to them. Now, don't send food. Don't send clothes. Don't send, physical stuff, because the problem is by the time you inventory this stuff, you receive it, you handle it, you ship it back out again, it gets to where it's going. By the time all that has happened, with the exception of some real high-end medical stuff or water purification stuff, I mean, there are a few exceptions to the rules, but certainly in the case of food and clothing, it costs more to ship it than it does to simply wire the money over there and buy the stuff locally or nearby. So it's almost always better, unless you happen to be, you know, in the water purification plant business or, a hospital that has access to very, very specialized equipment that might be of value. It's almost always better just to send money. Oxfam America, www.oxfamamerica.org, is one. Doctors Without Borders is another. Their website, www.doctorswithoutborders.org. And the third one that I recommend from personal experience, the American Friends Service Committee. This is a group that grew out of the Quakers. And www.afsc.org, as in American Friends Service Committee, afsc.org. So I just wanted to toss that out there so that you would have it as a starting point. 1-866-889-8894. I believe I mentioned our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, the website, George Bush and Iraq. What is going on? Our soldiers are paying for George Bush's year-and-a-half-long campaign commercials. This, in my opinion, is a crime. This is absolutely terrible. And what is even more ironic is not the right word. horrific, perhaps, is that while our soldiers are paying a terrible, terrible price, there was a fascinating article today. I don't recall the source. I read it this morning. I don't have it in front of me. That pointed out the Battle of Hue in Vietnam. You had three battalions go in, and as I recall, it was something like 160 people died. The Battle of Fallujah, three battalions went in, and as I recall, it was like 104 people died. The battles, the casualties that we are facing in Iraq right now are not all that different from what we faced in Vietnam, other than a matter of scale. There are fewer soldiers there. Therefore, there are fewer numerical deaths. But we are no longer keeping the peace. We are no longer protecting democracy. We are no longer looking for weapons of mass destruction. We are no longer preventing a nation from attacking its neighbors. We never were. We are playing defense. We are trying to stay alive long enough to install a government that will have enough legitimacy that we can walk away and dust our hands off. And hopefully we will do that in the second week of January after this new government is installed. I can't imagine, frankly, that it is going to work out with a unicameral legislature. I mean, they really need a bicameral legislature. They need to have two houses, one where the Kurds, the Sunnis, and the Shia have equal representation like our Senate, and one where they have proportional representation like our House of Representatives, in order to give the Sunni and the Kurd minorities a sense of participation and a belief that they will not be overwhelmed by the Shia majority. Or, for that matter, they could write into their constitution a ban on the merging of church and state, as we did with our First Amendment. But it looks like that's not going to happen, and the odds are we're going to end up with a Shiite theocracy aligned with Iran after Japan, after January, and the result of this will probably be civil war. It'll probably be that the Sunnis and the Kurds will say, enough of this, we're out of here. A lot of the Kurds, some of the Kurds are Muslim, many of them are Christian. The Sunnis want to have nothing to do with the Shia. The Sunnis are more aligned with Saudi Arabia, which is mostly Sunni. Osama bin Laden is a Sunni. Saddam Hussein was a Sunni. That's about as close as a relationship between the two that there is. The Shia, on the other hand, are like the Shia in Iran. Now, interestingly, the Iranians are not Arabs. They're Persians. They do not consider themselves Arabs. In fact, they tend to look down on the Arabs in the region. They consider themselves a race apart, as it were. But they share a religion, and the holiest of the Shia holy sites are not in Iran, they're in Iraq, even though Iran is the major Shia-dominated nation in the world. And so Iran, for many, many years, you know, thus the war with Saddam Hussein, has wanted to have these holy sites, and the odds are that they will have them after this election, and we will have given it to them. Pretty scary stuff. Anyhow, like the Civil War, writes Ronald Brownstein in the Los Angeles Times on Monday, when the rich draftee in the North could hire a poor man to take his place, the Iraq War risks being stained by systemic inequity. He says, soldiers tend to salute, not complain, but this war is straining the military so much that volunteer service may no longer precisely describe it. And he talks how we are, you know, we're sending soldiers over and over and over again back into the theater of battle. You see the article in the paper, I believe it was this morning, this morning's paper. It may have been yesterday's paper about the kid who shot himself in the leg, had his friend shoot him in the leg. It was in Philadelphia, as I recall. And he called police and said that he had been walking by some guys arguing, and one of them pulled out a gun and shot it, and by coincidence, the bullet hit him in the leg. And the cops investigated it and found that, in fact, his friend had shot him in the leg. He was home on leave from the Army or the Marine Corps or whatever, the reserves. I forget which branch or what nature of service. And he didn't want to go back to Iraq. This is a kid who was willing to be shot to avoid being killed. But the ultimate irony, as Brownstein points out, is that meanwhile, for everyone else in America, the war is proceeding without a cost greater than our unease and sorrow in watching the evening news. Since the Civil War, Americans have raised taxes to fund all of the nation's wars, but when Congress returns next month, one of President Bush's first priorities will be legislation making permanent the huge tax cuts he won during his first term. Bush's presidency marks the first time the U.S. has significantly cut taxes while at war. Since the federal budget deficit is already in deficit, that means we are effectively passing the bill for this war onto our children through an increased national debt. He goes on to say, like his tax cuts, Bush's personnel decisions are sending the unfortunate message that no one apart from the soldiers on the ground and their families should pay any price for this war. If the cause in Iraq is as vital as Bush insists, all Americans should contribute. And yet the people who did the screwed up planning, they're getting medals of honor. The people who botched the occupation, they're getting medals of honor. Only our soldiers are being asked to pay the price in blood. Not you, not me. Our soldiers and our children and our grandchildren will pay the financial price. But George W. and his friends, not a chance. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I was one of you who stood up for you.
Well, unfortunately, the top Sunni party is not sticking up for Alawi. This is the further descent into chaos that the entire world was predicting before George W. Bush decided to have his little preemptive war so he could become a wartime president, so he could get himself reelected in 2004, and he could get a little extra oil and money for his good buddies at Halliburton. Boy, does that sound cynical. I guess I am. Give me a better explanation, please. Prove to me I'm wrong. Convince me of something else. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff in Denver, Colorado on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi. Given that you're talking about the tsunami and Iraq, I thought I should point out last night, caught Anderson Cooper, watched him for the first time ever, on CNN. He said that they'd been getting emails complaining that they're showing so many pictures of bodies and such around the tsunami. He goes, well, but you know, we're just trying to show you what's going on. Rather ironic, though, that they don't show the bodies in Iraq.
Yeah. Neither military nor civilian. And this is one of the big differences, of course. The Arab news networks do show the bodies, and it may have bodies in Iraq that we are not seeing. 60,000 people dead in the tsunamis and only 16,000 verified dead in Iraq. But still, you haven't seen 60,000 people on TV. You might have seen a few dozen or a few hundred dead. It's enough to drive the point home, and that's really all it takes is the pictures of, you know, a few dead children and screaming mothers in Fallujah or in Baghdad or in Mosul, and people go, what are we doing? Why are we there? What's going on? And those pictures are not being shown here in America.
And it looks a lot of information is pointing that there have been more people who have died in Iraq actually than have died in the tsunami so far.
Well, that's the debate. That's the Lancet article. Yeah. I quoted that Lancet article yesterday where they said it's 100,000. And
yeah, even the Iraqi government though has reported on massive tens of thousands of civilians.
Yeah.
Having died, so there are a lot of places besides the Lancet article that are pointing out to tens of thousands of civilians dying.
Yeah, not to mention the people who are dying from things associated with the war. For example, the contamination of the water supplies and by the sewage systems because they're breaking down because we bombed it all so heavily, and you know many of them aren't operating, so people kids are dying at incredibly high rates of diarrheal diseases
and heart attacks and nutritional problems, etc.
Yeah. Yeah, all of the problems that come with war. It's just, war is absolute hell. I have been in war zones, and I can tell you that it is the most unimaginably horrible thing that humans can visit upon other humans. Well, and for Bush to think that it would be glorious and that he would get that he would get all kinds of wonderful PR and that it would usher him into re-election, as Karl Rove told him in January of 2002 in Crawford, Texas. Yes, he was right in the political sense, but God, the price that he has paid.
Mm-hmm. Well, CNN is definitely going to hear from me about the hypocrisy. I hope other people are pointing that out too.
Yes, that's an excellent one. I didn't see that and have absolutely sympathized. We're going to go back to the 50s where Beaver Cleaver, what was his parents' names?
Ward and June.
Ward and June, there you go. Where Ward and June slept in separate beds and you never even saw them get into those beds. Or are we, or are we going to, and never a body was seen and people got shot, they just fell over and said, oof, and that was it. Or are we going to see reality on TV? I mean, it's one or the other. If we can see You know, reality TV? Reality TV. It's
we need to ask for it, though.
Well, I think we need to demand it, or at least to demand some consistency. Yeah, well said. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. It's a Tom Hartman program helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle.
It's ironic. They're called answering machines, but they never give you answers. Oh, sure, they tell you so-and-so isn't here right now, but you have no idea where they went or when they'll be back. Of course, with GEICO, you won't talk to an answering machine. They have thousands of car insurance specialists standing by, so you always get answers from a real live person. No wondering, no waiting, no irony.
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO. 1-800-947-AUTO.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Laura Miller.
The path has been cleared for a judge to hear a class-action sexual discrimination complaint filed by female employees at the U.S. Mint. Filed by 32 female workers, the complaint alleges that managers at the Denver-based Mint use discrimination when considering job assignments, discipline, promotions, and terminations. In addition, the suit says women were subjected to a hostile working environment of sexual harassment. Damages for emotional abuse are expected to reach nearly $300,000 per employee. The Treasury Department filed for an appeal that was denied by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission on Monday.
Workers in the United States aren't the only ones with concerns about jobs being offshored to places like India and China. Amicus, the United Kingdom's largest manufacturing technical and skilled persons union, says that more than 12,000 British jobs were offshored in 2004. The union projects more than 18,000 additional jobs leaving by the end of next year. Companies insist that they are only moving low-paying processing jobs out of the UK. Amicus representatives say, however, that high-paying management jobs have also begun to move offshore. The union says Scotland has been hit especially hard because a high number of call centers operate there.
Employees at a major sugar producer went on strike yesterday after contract negotiations stalled. Nearly 650 Florida Crystal Corporation workers in Palm Beach County walked off the job over proposals to outsource the company's hauling jobs, eliminate overtime pay, and raise copays for health benefits. Represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, striking employees watched from the picket lines yesterday as non-union employees were bussed in to keep the plant running. The company says that the market is uncertain, and in order to remain competitive, it has to make some unpopular decisions. Both sides say they wish to return to the negotiation table as soon as possible.
Unlike the U.S. Justice Department, the European Union's Court of First Instance upheld a record $600 million fine against Microsoft for holding a monopoly in personal computer software. In addition, the computer giant will be required to reveal its Windows operating source code to the European Union and to allow third-party media players. In response to the ruling, Microsoft will offer a European version of the Windows operating system next month.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Poverty in America is continuing to increase. According to the Census Bureau, there were 1.3 million more poor people in the U.S. in 2003. The poverty level is 12.5% of the population. In the 50s, it was 22%. Then the War on Poverty helped cut poverty to 12.1% by 1969. Poverty has gone up for 3 years in a row. Among children, the poverty rate is 16.2%. 10.4% of the elderly are poor. Black and Hispanic poverty rates are much higher than average. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Be serious, be passionate, and wake up! Our quote for the day from Susan Sontag. Left this earth yesterday at the age of 71. Iraq's top Sunni Muslim party said Monday it was withdrawing from the January 30th elections because relentless bloodshed will keep people from voting in the long dominant Sunni North and West. Party Secretary General Tariq al-Hashimi said, quote, the Iraqi Islamic Party is withdrawing from the elections because we do not think the situation will improve in the next few weeks to give conditions for credible elections. Persistent violence in Sunni Arab cities, most of which are under curfew, has raised fears the voters there will be too intimidated, writes Lynn Newhide of on Reuters, has raised fears the voters will be too intimidated to cast their ballots, skewing the poll in favor of Iraq's 60% Shiite Muslim majority. As if it needed to be skewed. It's, how could we have failed to see this coming? I mean, we only had a million people in the streets saying to George Bush, hey, George, this is what's going to happen. One of the folks in our chat room, let's see if I can scroll up and find it. It was such a great comment about George W. Bush. And why, here it is. Bush was able to envision a war strategy for reelection because he was raised understanding that he was different, as in better, than us riffraff. This is from Chuck in Kona, Hawaii. Thank you, Chuck. Yes. And knew that he and his daughters would not have to go fight in that battle. See, this is the conservative notion of the conservative elite. That wealth rules, that wealth has a different set of rules. In fact, Dick Cheney's saying, well, when the Vietnam War came along, I had other priorities. Yes. George W. Bush having a friend of his father's call and jump him 300 and some odd people ahead of the line to get into the Texas Air National Guard. And then 6 months before his guard duty was up, writing a letter to the guard saying, I'd like to get out because I have something more important to do. I want to go to Harvard Business School. Try doing that if you're in the National Guard in Iraq today. Well, you say, the rules are different. We're at war now. We were at war then. In Vietnam. How could we have missed this? Former U.S. National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, this from an AFP story, strongly criticized the American-led invasion of Iraq and said the U.S. administration would have to scale down its ambitions for Iraq's future. Former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger expressed support for the invasion on the same CNN program, but said the U.S. administration had misjudged the difficulty of rebuilding Iraq and guiding it to democracy. Brzezinski, of course, was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. He said, and I quote, I personally think it was not worth it, in the sense that we have paid a high price in blood and estimate the suffering that this has already produced to tens of thousands of American families. He said tens of thousands of Iraqis have died and added, we're spending billions of dollars and we have... You know what we need to... Here's what we need to do. We need to get in a strong man who can put the government together, consolidate the Sunnis, the Shia, and the Iraqis, who will make it illegal for there to be a mixture of religion and government, so the Sunnis don't have to worry about the Shia imposing a Shiite theocracy like they have in Iran, and the Shia don't have to worry about the Sunnis doing this, and the Kurds don't have to worry about either of them doing it, who will allow women to work and not have to wear the veil and give them full civil protections, who will protect the economy so that the government can function in a reasonable fashion and the economy and business can go back so we can go from the 50% unemployment we have in Iraq right now back down to the 4 or 5% unemployment that they had before. What we need to do is we need to bring back Saddam Hussein. It would be better than what they have right now. Just pull him out of his jail cell. Say, okay, Saddam, it's yours, and leave town. It has gotten that bad. It is not worth the lives of another 1,000 Americans. It wasn't worth the lives of the first 1,000 Americans for George W.'s political campaign, for him to run for election, you know, knowing, as Karl Rove pointed out, that no American president in wartime has ever failed to get reelected. We've got to make you a war president. And George W. going on TV show. You got to understand, I'm a war president. Thomas Ricks in the Washington Post quotes an army historian. The U.S. military invaded Iraq without a formal plan for occupying and stabilizing the country. And this high-level failure, in other words, Don Rumsfeld and George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz, and this high-level failure continues to undercut what has been a mediocre army effort there, an army historian and strategist has concluded. Major Isaiah Wilson III, he's an official historian of the campaign, served as an official historian for the U.S. Army of the Iraqi campaign, and later as a war planner. This is not some Monday morning quarterback. This is not, you know, some commentator on faux news or whatever. This is the guy who's the official historian of the campaign working for the U.S. military. Major General Isaiah Wilson, quote, "There was no phase four plan," end quote, for occupying Iraq after the combat phase. While a variety of government offices had considered the possible situations that would follow a U.S. victory, Wilson writes, no one produced an actual document laying out a strategy to consolidate the victory after major combat operations ended. Here is Wilson in his own words. Quote, while there may have been plans at the national level, and even within various agencies within the war zone, none of these plans operationalized the problem beyond regime collapse. End quote. That is, none of them laid out how U.S. forces would be moved and structured. He goes on to say, quote, there was no adequate operational plan for stability operations and support operations, end quote. The Washington Post notes, several similar criticisms have been made before, but until now they have not been stated so authoritatively and publicly by a military insider positioned to be familiar with top-secret planning. Jack Beatty in the Atlantic Unbound, writes a brilliant piece titled The Butcher's Bill. Imagine 5,000 U.S. soldiers dead, 25,000 wounded, 4,000 bereaved children. A look at the future of the war in Iraq. Jack Shannonberger, age 4, says, I don't want to be a daddy because daddies die. He said this after his father, Staff Sergeant Wentz Baron Shannonberger, a military policeman from Louisiana, was killed in Iraq. With his four brothers and sisters, writes Jack Beatty, with his four brothers and sisters, Jack is among the nearly 900 American children who have lost a parent in Iraq. We have created 900 orphaned American children. According to experts cited by Lisa Hoffman and Annette Rainville in a moving story for the Scripps Howard News Service, quote, the proportionally higher number of American children left behind by the war is unprecedented. The Iraq War, end quote. Past U.S. wars were mainly fought by single men, but 40% of the 1,256 GIs killed in Iraq as of November were married, and 459, including six women, had children. Shanna Corey tells her children that, while you might forget what your daddy looks like, you should always remember his hugs, always remember his kisses, always remember his love. They remember their father, not so the children of the 40 men who died while their wives were pregnant. Defense analyst Anthony Cordesman forecasts that many more children will share Jack Shannonberger's grief if, as Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld has indicated, U.S. forces stay in Iraq until 2008 or 2009. By then, Cordesman estimates 5,038 U.S. troops will have died. In the meantime, the Protestant world's equivalent of the Pope, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Well, actually, he's not quite the equivalent of the Pope. I guess you'd say the Queen is the equivalent of the Pope. The Queen is the theoretical top dog in the Anglican Church, Church of England. But the Archbishop of Canterbury is the let's say the head of the church. I'm not Anglican, so I'm not familiar with the exact phraseology, but you get the point. Dr. Rowan Williams is his name. He used his Christmas sermon this last week to accuse world leaders of wrongly focusing too heavily on combating terrorism while failing to meet their promise to cut global poverty by half by 2015. We are pursuing the aims of war and not the aims of Christianity. He also said basic principles of justice and liberty for all were being sacrificed for security. Meanwhile, the head of the Catholic Church, Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, criticized using, quote, billions of pounds, billions of dollars, for conflicts in the Middle East instead of, quote, bringing people out of dire poverty, malnourishment, and disease. Bush has even turned the churches against us. He has even turned the churches against us. And now we have, what, 4 weeks, five, between now and the elections in Iraq? As Ania Cazendio writes in the Christian Science Monitor, planning an election is difficult even under the best of circumstances. As one UN consultant remarked, it's the largest logistical operation that a country undertakes outside warfare. To pull it off, many post-conflict nations need at least a year. We're going to do it in the next 5 weeks. The short time frame, she says, coupled with the insurgency, is forcing Iraq's election commission to sacrifice both voter education and the safeguards necessary for a fair election. The logistical hurdles also raise questions about the legitimacy of the January 30th vote, which brings us back to the situation. If Iraqis don't view this vote as legitimate, and I'm telling you right now, the Sunnis will not. There is just no way the Sunnis are going to view this vote as legitimate. If the Sunnis do not, we are headed down the road toward a civil war, which, frankly, in my opinion, has already begun. We are no longer keeping the peace. We are plus, and the defense that we are trying to do is to keep them from killing us while in the process trying to kill each other. You've got Sunnis setting off bombs in Shia territories and killing Shia clerics. You've got Shia killing Sunnis. You got the Kurds trying to keep as far away from all of it as they can, except way up in the north there, where in Kirkuk, the oil-rich community, which was once at various times has been either Kurdish or Sunni, back and forth, the Kurds are fighting the Sunnis. On Monday, the Iraqi Islamic Party, the largest Sunni party, pulls out of the elections. Way back in September, the commissioners were still, quote, begging, end quote, international agencies for funds to protect themselves and their families, according to an international consultant who asked not to be named. This, again, back to the story from the Christian Science Monitor. She notes insurgents are targeting poll workers, too. Sundus El-Shamari, a young Iraqi journalist who quit her job to help prepare for the elections, was approached by an acquaintance with ties to the insurgency. He said, be warned, if you work with this organization, that being just, you know, the UN group that is helping to put together the elections, he says, if you work with this organization, they will do to you what they did to Margaret Hansen. Margaret Hansen, you may recall, is the woman who was recently beheaded in Iraq. These threats are serious, notes the Christian Science Monitor. On December 19th, insurgents dragged three elections workers out of their car on a busy Baghdad thoroughfare and shot them, execution style, in the street. So how many Iraqis are going to vote in this election? Well, so far they have 650,000 new registrations. About 200,000 people have made corrections. And the total number of eligible voters, about 15 million, if they come out to vote, the new registrations would be about 5.6%. It's going to be a real problem. I mean, this is going to be a real and serious problem in Iraq. The legitimacy, talk about the Ukraine, talk about the United States. Was the vote legitimate? Was it real? Did we really vote that way? Does this really reflect the will of the? No, it doesn't. We're going to have an illegitimate election followed by a civil war, and we told George Bush this would happen before he started this insane process, 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The Clean Air Act is due for an update, according to the author of a new book about air. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. President Kennedy signed the Clean Air Act into law in 1963. Author Joe Sherman says a number of factors made it politically possible to pass a federal law attacking pollution, a subject that until then had been left to the states. Sherman is the author of a new book called Gasp, The Swift and Terrible Beauty of Air. He says air pollution had killed 4,000 people in London over a 4-day period in 1952. Then Rachel Carson published Silent Spring, a book that helped spark the modern environmental movement.
Silent Spring, Carson's book, gave Kennedy a lot of boost. It brought air issues into the public agenda. And Kennedy really pushed the first Clean Air Act through. It didn't have a lot of enforcement muscle. It took until 1970 for that to happen.
The act was amended again in 1977 and 1990. But Sherman says problems have arisen over the last 14 years that should prompt another look at the law.
It has not been amended again, but it struggles to kind of deal with the air pollution situation America keeps making bigger. It has a lot of very good features to it. but it basically is an institutional device that's fallen behind the kind of extent of the pollutants we have. It doesn't deal at all with global warming, which now has become, I call it the big worry in my book. It's particularly indicative of how our institutions have failed to keep up with the realities of pollution.
Sherman says global warming, caused in part by air pollution, could become the biggest force of change humans have ever had to face. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
To walk within the lines would make my life so boring.
We don't want boring.
To know that I have been to the extreme.
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Shelby wants me to let you know. Shelby, who runs RadioPower.org. Which web streams this program all around the planet. Last count I saw was 97 countries. I'll bet it's up since then. In fact, right now, in our termed some of the painful truths, writes the Washington Post in an op-ed piece on Thursday. Painful truths about the abuse of foreign detainees by the U.S. military and the CIA. Here's the bottom line on this. Abu Ghraib, the tortures in Afghanistan. Torture, literally torture, happening in the American concentration camp, Camp X-Ray down at Guantanamo Bay, built by Halliburton. The new documents establish beyond any doubt that every part of the cover story is false. The cover story being that the crimes were carried out by a few low-ranking reservists. So when our soldiers get caught by the bad guys, we have no legal claim to protection. This is insane. The Bush administration is nuts. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Mike Toth and Ben Birch for our archives, the folks in our chat room for showing up. Stick around, we'll be carrying on. And to you for listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call